G'day, you mob. How's it going? Welcome to this episode of Aussie English. This is a very special episode where I get to sit down with my beautiful wife, Kel, and talk to you, recap the birth of our second child, Joanna. So, it has been a bit of an event, as you guys probably know if you were keeping track of things as they were happening on social media. But we are safe and sound now. And yeah, we took the opportunity yesterday whilst our daughter was sleeping and my son was at my parents' place to sit down on our bed with these sort of little lav mics and chat to one another about the recent events. Okay. So anyway, the reason for this episode, besides obviously telling you a little bit about what happened and giving you an insight into our experiences, whilst Kel was going to a lot of these appointments and checkups and monitoring sessions at the hospital because Joanna was undersized, she ended up encountering and meeting a lot of immigrant women, and particularly quite a few that didn't have very good English. And so, when she came home and told me about it, she was sort of concerned about the fact that these poor women had no real idea about what was going on. They probably didn't understand what it was like to give birth in Australia. You know, the fact that they may encounter male doctors for some of these sort of more intimate procedures, and that they had the ability to ask for a translator, all of that sort of stuff. So, I thought this would be a great opportunity to sit down with my wife and allow us to tell you in as much detail as we can the kinds of processes and procedures and situations and everything like that that Kel went through whilst giving birth and whilst going to all these appointments in Australia, just so that any of you women out there who are thinking of giving birth or who are potentially pregnant or maybe even, you know, really close to giving birth, will have some more information and a better understanding of what to expect when going through this process in Australia. Anyway, long intro there, guys. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Without any further ado, I give you my beautiful wife and our young daughter who's sleeping in the background. Let's go. Alrighty, guys. Well, I think this is going to be a bit of a different podcast for you. This is a three-way podcast. We've got Kelly here. That's yep. Where you say hello.
Hello.
And we've got Joanna here. Say hello, Joanna.
She's got hiccups.
She's got hiccups. And I'm here, obviously, guys. So, I thought I would harass my wife to come on the podcast because Noah is currently with his grandparents.
Thank God.
Although, he would normally be asleep. He's probably asleep with my grandparents. With my grandparents.
So.
With his grandparents.
I hope so.
But he is now quite a bit of a handful whilst we also have a newborn baby in the house, right?
Yeah. I thought... I mean, I was trying to stay positive about it and just hope he would just, you know, not care or just be really nice. But, no.
Yeah, well, I thought we could do this podcast to talk about the last week. So, I guess we can start with, I was having a really good day on the 11th. Was that Thursday or Wednesday?
That was Thursday.
Thursday's when you get birth, right?
So, 11th.
So, Wednesday.
Yes.
So, I had a good workout. I was doing bench press. Working on my chest, having a great time. And then, as soon as I finished the workout, I had a shake and all of a sudden felt really ill and tight in the stomach and nauseous, and assumed at the time that I had eaten something because I had taken a meal. I'd made all these pre-made meals and I'd taken them out of the freezer to defrost, to thaw, and left them out, ate all but one, and put that one back in the fridge just as a sort of automatic reaction without thinking about it because, you know, it's still out. I'll put it back in the fridge.
Yeah.
Left it in there for a day. Took it out the next day, the day that I was working out. Put it through the microwave, heated it up, seemed fine, ate it. And then, after the workout, got nauseous, was lying in bed and was like, oh, my God, I think I've given myself food poisoning, so I'm going to be out
from the chicken.
From the chicken, yeah. I'm going to be out of the count, Kel. You're going to have to take care of Noah. I'm sorry tonight. You know, I'm dead. And then Kel, you know, was a trooper. As I was descending into nausea, Kel was taking care of Noah, put him to bed, came lay down in the bed. And what happened, Kelly? Whilst you were lying in bed and I was staring at the ceiling, trying not to puke on myself.
I felt a kick, like, you know, as if the baby had kicked me.
Yeah.
But it was weird because it was like a, I don't know how, it's hard to explain. Mm-hmm. It was just a bit more painful.
There was a pop.
Yeah, it was a pop. That's the word I was looking for. It was a pop. I was like, oh, okay. And I even told you, like, ouch. Like,
she kicked the crap out of me.
She's kicking me. And then, yeah, and then I went to the bathroom because, you know, I was going to brush my teeth and stuff. And realized it wasn't a kick. It was a pop. Mm-hmm. My waters had broken. And I think when I told you,
either I'm pissing myself a lot right now and I have no idea, or my waters are broken and things are moving.
The funny thing was, when I told you, when I got up from the bed, I even thought about, like, oh, you know, imagine if, like, what a joke, you know? And then when I told you, I think you took like 10, 15 seconds to reply. We're like, really?
Yeah, I was like, what? You gotta be kidding.
And then it was for you. The party was on.
I know. And I guess it sunk in at that moment because I realized even if I'd wanted to go to the hospital with you, I wouldn't have been let in because they're doing COVID tests. And if you have a temperature and, you know, I mean, even if I didn't have a temperature and they said, oh, you've got gastro food poisoning, yeah, you can't come
even
in.
Even if there was no COVID restriction, that mm-hmm. was just not a nice thing to do, you know, go to the hospital.
Yeah, it's pretty selfish.
Yeah. And then what would you do anyway? Because you'll be feeling horrible.
Well, and would I give it to you?
Yeah.
Would I give it to Joanna? Would I give it to the nurses taking care of you?
And everyone else.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was just... It was upsetting. It was like, oh, I can't believe this is happening all at the same time right now. It's like 10 p.m.
I was like, could you believe it?
Jesus.
Could you believe it?
And the funny thing is, was it on the same day or the day before that I had the stretch and sweep?
The same day. You had it on Wednesday.
Really?
Do you want to describe that?
So it was the same day. So,
so yeah, before we get into the rest of this episode, guys, obviously we're going to be discussing things like birth and potentially procedures that are involved in that, and female anatomy. If you're squeamish, if you're not interested in that kind of conversation, if there are children around, obviously turn this episode off, skip this episode, go listen to one of the other more family friendly episodes. Otherwise, if you're interested in the kind of vocab and topic and everything like that, you know, then let's just dive in. Kel, so you had a stretch and sweep.
Yes.
Which is the first time I'd ever heard of this.
Yeah, I didn't know about it either.
So, do you want to describe in vivid detail?
Jesus, no.
what kind of a procedure
it
this is?
It is an internal examination sort of thing. Because we knew that I would have to be induced to give birth to this girl.
Mm-hmm. And she had to come early because she was not fully sized.
Yeah.
Not as big as she should have been.
And then... to avoid going on the drip, like when they give you drugs and stuff to bring
I think they give you oxytocin, right?
Yeah.
Is it that? And that induces contractions. Yeah, but it's painful because it's not a slow ramp up. It's a sudden... Yeah. We'll give you this exact dose and the contractions go from effectively 0 to 100.
I think for me, the main thing was I would be attached to this drip and unable to move and sit on the yoga ball and do other things like just walk and...
And get filled up with liquid.
Yeah, it was not really, it's not really pleasant.
You did this for Noah. So for you guys wondering, she's already had this experience and was not plussed when she had it.
So I wanted to avoid that. And one of the things they try to avoid, the drip and try and bring labor naturally is, the stretch and sweep when they actually, the doctor checks you.
Like he inserts his fingers inside of you, in your vagina, and stretches your cervix, right?
Yes.
So, when you get close to giving birth, your cervix is already dilated somewhat, right? I think you went in and you were 2 centimeters dilated.
Yeah.
And so, apparently, I guess what he's doing is effectively mimicking the baby's head, putting more pressure on the cervix, which would stretch it out. And so, by putting putting her or his fingers inside and stretching the cervix, it's causing your body to think, oh, crap, I'm about to give birth. You know, I'm getting closer.
Yeah, imagine so.
And it's a cascade of hormones that gets set off, right?
Yeah.
But the interesting thing was I think you got told it was going to be at least, you know, a day or two. before your body would react.
48 hours, you kind of like, oh yeah, you might go into labor or you might not. So if you don't in like 48 hours, it's probably like because the thing didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't feeling anything. I wasn't feeling cramps. I was just like, this thing didn't work. Like I had some bleeding.
Yeah.
But I just came back home and was fine. And then, you know, 10 p.m. or so, you know, something, which is my waters broke, which is a clear sign of, you know, you might be getting into labor very soon.
Well, I think we were talking to the doctors, and I think what happened would have been that the hormonal cascade would have been set off.
Mm-hmm.
And so, your uterus would have started to contract slowly and put a lot of pressure on, mm-hmm. on the placenta, the full that was full of liquid with the baby inside, mm-hmm. and that would have caused the placenta to then rupture, which then continues that process of setting off.
Yeah.
Now you're going to have more contractions. Now it's going to, we're going to descend into, you know, the process of giving birth.
Yeah, it was very different from what happened with Noah, because I didn't have contractions after my waters broke with Noah. Because they broke naturally. I just didn't have contractions or dilation.
And that was a weird situation too, right, where your waters with Noah broke, but it seemed, I think they guessed that a rupture was at the top of the placenta because the liquid wasn't coming out consistently, and a lot of it was sort of coming out little bit by little bit, because if the rupture is right at the top of the placenta and you're standing upright, the liquid's not really going to seep out the same way as if the rupture was right at the bottom of the placenta and the water, gravity's going to push the water out really quickly, right? So, that was an interesting day where we went to Queenscliff and had ice cream and were walking around waiting for contractions to start, and you were like, ooh, a lot of liquid just came out, and then nothing for an hour or two, and you would, you know, bend over or something and change position and be like, ooh, more liquid just came out.
Whereas this time, I went to the hospital to get checked and just make sure that it was, you know, my waters that had broken. I wasn't just peeing myself. And a lot came out, like a lot, like almost, I know, I felt like it was everything.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was just little bits every now and then. So I think it did, you know, came out just the most, almost everything. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Craziness.
Yeah.
So, well, you went to the hospital to get checked after the waters broke, with and they usually give you something like 18 hours, maybe 12 hours to see if contractions will start, because they're worried about if contractions don't begin before that naturally, they'll have to induce you because they're worried about bacterial infection and other things that can happen.
I think I had until 4 p.m. the next day.
Yeah.
I had to be there anyway.
Yeah.
With contractions or not, if by four my it hadn't started.
And you'd arrived home and you were having contractions every now and then.
So,
right?
I went to the hospital started. And they sent me back. I stayed there for like 4 hours.
Yeah.
You know, and then
with my mum.
Yeah. Then we're like, oh, you know, we can go home, just, you know, make sure I was having contractions but not I don't think they would be even called contractions at this stage.
So, you mean that they were, at the time you were calling them contractions, but then in comparison to what you went through later.
No, it's just not, I was having pain, but I was like, you know, I just go home.
Can you hold the mic just a little bit closer to you?
Yeah.
Sorry. See if it,
there you go.
Yeah, see if it gives you, because I have a feeling you're going to be a bit softer than I am.
Okay.
I'm just loud as fuck.
It's no, just I'm my, just tired. My personality. Too, so.
Sorry, guys. So, anyway, you went to the hospital with my mum. You got monitored. They put the machine on you, checked that the baby was okay, heart rate was all good, you know, everything like that. And then you ended up coming home, obviously, and they were like, come back tomorrow at 4 if contractions haven't ramped up to a certain level.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we woke up at about 7 in the morning and you were starting to get contractions within.
I didn't sleep. So, by the time we came back, it was like 3 a.m. or something.
Mm-hmm.
I knew we would be sick here and I was worried about you. And
yeah, meanwhile, I was on the bathroom floor vomiting. And I haven't vomited. I mean, I'll side story, guys. You know, let's go off on a detour, on a side quest. I hadn't been sick in 5 fucking years.
I know.
You know, sorry to swear.
Told everyone about it.
I'm doing this to emphasize it, right? Like, it's good to swear sometimes, but I hadn't been sick in 5 fucking years. So, I hadn't been sick since I was at university, probably in 2016, and at the gym training jiu-jitsu, where I was interacting with people all the time.
Yeah.
and on public transport, you know, touching handles on things, opening doors, and so you would just get colds all the time.
Yeah.
But as soon as I started working from home, after we moved to Canberra and I was just working full-time from home, I never got ill. It was amazing.
It was, yeah.
Probably reflected my social life a little bit, but it was amazing.
You were never sick. No. Like, I remember I got sick a few times. Like
in Canberra?
No, once in Canberra and then here, I think. Yeah. But you were never sick. Even, like, Noah would get sick. I would get sick after and then we'll be fine.
I kept jinxing myself, though, because I think more recently I was talking about it, especially because Noah had been at family daycare and hadn't really gotten sick and brought anything home.
Yeah.
Whereas our nieces and nephews, well, my niece, our niece, has been at daycare and has pretty much brought something home every single week to make her parents sick. Oh, God,
poor things, I know. They're always sick.
So, yeah, I hadn't been sick in 5 years. And then Noah's obviously contracted something from daycare. It turned out not to be food poisoning because my dad ended up with it the next day.
Yeah, your dad came here to take care of you and your mom took me to the hospital.
Yeah. And he stayed the night and then in the morning he was like, I'm not feeling great. And when he went home, he sent me a message and like in the afternoon he was like, yeah, I've been having diarrhea and vomiting everywhere. It's not food poisoning because that's not contagious. It's clearly gastro. And then we found out, I did a sort of Google search and we found out that there's been gastro all throughout the daycare centres. And we found out our friends down the street here with their children who are at Noah's new daycare have had it.
They've been
here.
Their
entire family's had it. They've been here.
We went to their place.
You went to their place. We've eaten food. They cook for us.
She cooked for us. That's true. Oh, God. So, no, it all makes sense now.
So, anyway, that happened. And the night when you were feeling bad and you were off getting checked and monitored, I was on the bathroom floor vomiting, you know, into the toilet. And it was just so weird because I haven't vomited for probably a decade. I remember the last time I vomited was when I literally had food poisoning from chicken that I'd eaten from a restaurant and it had obviously not been cooked properly because it was pretty much straight after that. But I remember how horrible that was and I was like, I just hate vomiting. I'm one of those people that just hates vomiting. I do not like it.
Anyway. I hate the final sort of stages when there is nothing to come out. But
and it's just painful. Yeah. You're like, yeah, no, I kept saying that. I'm on my hands and knees vomiting into the toilet and still reaching, you know, like going, and I'm like, there's nothing left. Just stop. Stop, body. There's nothing left.
That's the most horrible feeling.
There's nothing there. But I found out when I was looking up about gastro, which is, I should mention, guys, it's a slang term or the short term. It means stomach, right, or digestive tract. Gastroenteritis is the full word for, I think they're novoviruses or rotaviruses that you can get that infect the lining of your stomach and intestines. And the reason you get sick is because they strip away all of the epithelial cells, the cells that are absorbing nutrients out of your food that you have in your system. And you vomit and have diarrhea because your body has to get rid of the food that's inside of you or else because it can't absorb it, it can't digest it. I believe, I know I'm not a doctor, but I think that your body is like, well, if it just sits there, it's going to get a bacterial infection and it'll make you even worse in terms of sickness. And it's a way of clearing the virus out. So, that's why you end up vomiting and having diarrhea because all of the nutrients that you've consumed can't be digested. I had a lot of showers. I think I had 6 showers. I don't know why that makes you feel so good. Just hot showers whilst you're vomiting or sick like that.
I came back and my contractions were quite...
you had one as well, didn't you?
And I went straight to the shower, which is so good. So good. Felt really good.
But I think I probably spent as much time on the bathroom floor as I did in my bed. And it was almost nice. Like, I kept getting a temperature that was going up and down. At one point, I was in all of my... I was in a hoodie and tracksuit pants beneath the sheet and the quilt in the bed and felt cold. But my temperature was like 37 point something degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So, I had a temperature. And I remember just stripping off and just lying on the cold tiles after vomiting and just being like, oh, my God, this is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And to the point then afterwards where I got so cold, I wanted to have a hot shower. So... anyway, sorry, that's probably the boring part of the night, but that was what I was doing whilst Kel was getting checked.
Yeah, and then I came back and then You didn't sleep, you're in pain and vomiting, and I tried to sleep, and I was just, contractions were just picking up. I remember holding, what do you call this thing on the bed?
The headboard.
I was just holding this, like, whoa, that's
very regular. This is the wooden metal thing at the top of the bed where you can, like, that you can hold on to.
I was holding on, it's just like,
or let sit against.
Just feeling, okay, this is real. Like, this is happening. Because, anyway. And then,
because you weren't in a rush to have the baby, were you? You were kind of like, wanted to hold on to a few days.
No, my induction was booked for Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I wanted it even later.
So, 2 days from now is when you were thinking you were going to get induced.
Yeah. So, we had to call your mom back at 7 or something.
Yeah.
Because I was feeling, I was in a lot of pain and just not, just wanted to make sure she was fine, because the whole pregnancy was a bit like, she's tiny, you know, she has this and that issue and everything. And I'm like, all right, let's go back to the hospital. You know, if there's a safe place for me to be, everyone here's sick.
I'm amazed you didn't get it.
Didn't get it.
Well, I guess out of any of us that would have done best without it, it was probably you. Mm-hmm. So, it's good that you did. I can't imagine you trying to give birth whilst having gastro. That would be like the worst imaginable combination.
My God.
Like, birth is bad enough from what I've heard from you.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you, all the women listening to this who've given birth can attest to that. I can't imagine if you were sick or, you know, there is something else affecting you in the meantime. No, like, I can't, that would imagine. Be a nightmare.
You just can't.
You'd just be like, Caesar, cesarean. Just give me a cesarean. I'm not dealing with this. So, anyway, do you want to talk about the birth? You went in there with mum and I didn't get to see it. I was all pumped. I was going to vlog it, you know, try and do a video or have a little bit of history for us to be able to remember the moment. But I was also pleased that mum had the chance to be involved and go with you.
It is interesting because our daughter is named after her, your mum.
And your best friend.
And my best friend.
Yeah.
And I just think that was really special for your mom to be there. I don't know. I obviously wanted you to be there, but it was a real, we were talking about it in the hospital. It was a female thing. Like, we were all that together with the midwives, and Shani, who is a student midwife again, she saw Noah.
She was
being
there
born.
For Noah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
and
it
she's
was
followed just, us again for Joanna. Yeah.
So it was this real, like, sort of thing. We had our experience that we share, your mom and I now. It was really, I think it really brought us closer together.
Mm.
Like, it was really interesting. And honestly, she was my rock in there. Like, I don't know, if she wasn't there, I would be like, God. But yeah, and then I went back to the hospital and my contractions really started to pick up. Like, I wasn't even in the birth, what do you call it, suite?
Birth suite. So, that would be where you're giving, the place
I wasn't
where you
there.
Are to
I was
give birth.
Just being monitored.
Yeah, like, you were just in a room. Yeah.
And then I was in scream, but it was mourning, like, you know, just like, everyone could see it.
Just that unavoidable.
And people would walk past me and just say, like, oh, good luck, because I was visibly
okay. Thank you.
It was not. And I always imagine, like, oh, you know, I'm not going to be one of those that screams the hospital down and things.
Because, when you were there for Noah, giving birth to Noah, you hear all these women going nuts, going, like, just literally screaming their lungs out.
I came to realize that is a very instinctive, if that's a word, and it's a very last stage of labor, because you lose control of your, what you're doing. You're like, you're out of consciousness.
I think it's also been shown in scientific studies to reduce pain.
Yeah.
Or the perception of pain, if you are able to let out.
Mm.
I mean, there's studies that have been done, again, going on a side quest, side mission here to talk about something else. I've seen studies that were done where people have to put their hands into ice water and one's group is allowed to swear and the other one has to use words that aren't swear words to deal with the pain. And the ones that swear, you know, they put their hands in the water and they can say, fuck, 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 shit, or whatever. They can last much longer in the water than the people who aren't allowed to swear because they can let out that pain. So, I would imagine it's the same thing with screaming where-
That's interesting.
If women are allowed to scream during childbirth, they probably are able to manage the pain more easily.
It is a very- it's just, you can't control it, you know? Yeah. It's not as if, oh, yeah, I'll just try and be quiet right now. You just can't. Like, you can't stop it from... It's very... imagine an animal. Or
Kel's breastfeeding right now, guys. She's doing a stealth breastfeed during the podcast.
Like, you know, like a... it's just an animal in the forest. It's just, like, trying to... It's very... it's hard to explain. Like, you become this... It's very... animalistic, is that a word?
Animalistic, primitive.
Primitive, mm-hmm. Yes. It's very primitive. It takes you to this very primitive place where you just your body's just acting and you're not...
Yeah, conscious of what's conscious going on.
Exactly. So, yeah, went to hospital, straight into the monitoring part. It was already, you know, I was already in a lot of pain. Asked for pain relief already. I was just like...
you went in prepared this time. Originally, when you had Noah, you weren't keen to have an epidural, right?
No.
I mean, because you wanted to do it yourself. You want to do it under your own steam. You want to do it with your own energy, your own power, your own strength. And it's an interesting thing I kept saying to you, at least with Noah. I was like, it doesn't make you less of a woman. Oh, you know,
no. It's all those first-time mom things that you just... take on board that just, instead of helping you, just make you judge yourself even more.
Well, I think a lot of women in particular see other women taking the epidural, especially for their first birth, as the easy way out.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of, I mean, from the outside, I see a lot of judgment. I've heard a lot of the feedback you've given me from these mothers groups who talk about this sort of stuff, and it seems, it's, you know, a badge of honor to have never used any pain killers.
But yeah.
This time you went in and you were like, epidural me. Give me an epidural.
I asked in the waiting. No, it's not a waiting room. It's just like monitoring sort of, you know, because they check your heartbeat and baby's heartbeat and everything.
Yeah.
And the lady was like, no, she gave me some, she gave me pills. Like, I don't remember the name of the medication. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, so I can only get, I can only have an epidural when I change rooms, right? And she kind of giggled like, she's like, darling, you can't have an epidural right now. It's quite risky. You know, we don't have the, it's just a waiting sort of, you can't have an epidural here. And I'm like, all right, okay, fine. And then I did go to a different room where you actually give birth. And, you know, and that was
the birth real suite.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the epidural worked or didn't work?
I got there, asked for an epidural straight away. And it takes like an hour for everything to get ready for them to come because, you know, it's a public hospital. And the guy was really nice and really gentle and just like really...
Not as weird as the guy we had the first time for Nora, huh?
It was a bit... This guy
he took his stuff full on. He was like very serious about it.
He was under pressure. No, this one was really relaxed and just really nice. And he applied it and it worked. At first, but it was a clear difference between my left side and my right side. On my left side, it was much stronger and I couldn't, it was hard for me to move my leg. But on the other side, I was like, yeah, there is a difference, but it's not, if you pinch me, I'll feel it. I was just like, you know, we were like, oh, you know, just, it's going to work. Like, keep pumping. Cause you get given a control that you to release the drug.
Well, and crazily, I think it's fentanyl, isn't it? At least that's what it was when you were giving birth to Noah. I believe it was fentanyl that you were given, which is like 100 times more potent than heroin. I mean, it's a very tiny amount that you're given, but yeah. But I think that there's definitely a limit on the switch.
Yeah, you can't. I reached the limit, like, it's like 4 hours something.
Yeah, you can do one every 15 minutes or something.
Yeah, and I couldn't pump it anymore.
Yeah.
And then we realized that it didn't, it wasn't working. I'll just put her down.
Go for it.
It wasn't working. Oh, she's still, hungry or what? All right. Sorry, guys. So yeah, it wasn't working and we asked for the person to come back, the guy to come back. What do you call it?
Anesthesiologist?
Anesthesist.
It's one of the most difficult words in English.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the medical terms are.
So he came back and he gave me a top up, like
an anesthetist.
Anesthetist.
Got to get the emphasis right as well.
He gave me another, a different medication. And he
which
said.
Which wasn't an epidural related one.
No, but it wasn't the same sort of
thing.
And then he said, let's wait 20 minutes and see if it works. And it worked for 20 minutes. It was literally heaven.
For 20 minutes.
For 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. I couldn't feel anything. Mm-hmm. I was happy and chatting. And your mom probably...
loved it.
Your mom probably can talk about it because she said, you look like a different person. Mm. Like, you just like... bright and, you know, happy and positive.
This sounds like, again, side mission, side quest. This sounds like when I had my teeth taken out, my wisdom teeth.
Mm.
I only had to get the teeth on my lower jaw removed, the upper jaw. I had space because when I had, what are they called again? Braces.
Mm-hmm.
When I was thinking it's, what do you call it in Portuguese? Aparelho?
Aparelho.
Yeah, right. Device. I had braces when I was 16. Got them on my birthday.
Really?
My 16th birthday. But they had to remove two teeth on the top jaw to fit the braces in because they wanted to make room for the molars as they came in, my wisdom teeth. So, anyway, because I only had to get the bottom teeth on my lower jaw removed, they didn't have to give me a full general anesthetic. They just had to give me a sort of mild... sedative, so that I was sort of not completely unconscious, but just out of it. Okay. And I remember when I woke up, I was on cloud nine. I was so happy. I was just like, this is freaking amazing.
Your mom.
Yeah, my mom, she took me home in the car and was asking me all these questions about my love life and everything at the time that she knew I would never tell her
a thing
in when I wasn't, you know, drugged up to the eyeballs. And so, she was asking all these questions, you know, are you dating someone? Are you seeing someone?
Really? Yeah. Oh, sneaky.
And at the time, I remember pointing my finger to her and saying, or she told me this afterwards, actually, you know, you're trying to trick me, Mum. But I still told her. I was like, damn it. But yeah, I remember feeling amazing from whatever drug that was. Whereas when my sister had it, her wisdom teeth out the next week, she had a general anesthetic and she came out so seedy and angry, and Mum tried the same thing and she wasn't having a bar of it. My sister was pissed.
Really?
Yeah, she was not happy.
What?
She just felt like crap, right? Yeah. She felt rotten because of a general anesthetic usually makes you just feel horrible. Anyway, so you ended up feeling great.
I felt great. It was the best. It was positive. I was talking to everyone.
Bring the mic closer.
Making in joking around and, you know. You know what it is like when you spend a lot of time in a hospital when you kind of get...
given birth.
No, well, you were there with me last time. You just, that's only the people that see you, that you talk to, when you just start asking questions. And it was really nice.
Mm-hmm.
We realized it wasn't working and I got the new medication. It worked for 20 minutes and it came back. The pain came back.
Mm-hmm.
But when the pain came back, I was in transition, which is the... last stage of labor before she comes out. Well, the very last stage I think is when the placenta comes out, but like, let's consider before the baby's out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a lot of pain, if I can say it mildly.
You can swear.
It is a kind of pain that takes you just can't think straight. You can't. Unless, you know, you are super prepared and like you've done it like 20 times but I can't imagine. I mean, from my experience, it was really shocking and.
You'd have to be like a Buddhist monk.
Yeah. To be able to handle it as if it were nothing. Because, And they were like, oh, you know, let's check you again. And everything was changing positions was excruciating.
Mm.
They checked me. And I'm like, please tell me I'm 10 centimeters dilated. Because if I'm 6, you know.
It's a long way to go.
And then they were like, you're 9.
Yeah.
And that's when my confidence cracked. Because I thought, well, I'm in this amount of pain. It's still one little bit to go. Which is, you know, it shouldn't be far away. But, you know, you just think, how long am I going to stay here for? And then they changed me because baby wasn't really happy the position I was in. They put me like, they set me down sort of thing. And the pressure of having the baby sitting there and I'm, you know, sort of reclined. Mm-hmm. It was just unbearable. I was just screaming the hospital down.
Mm-hmm.
I was just not there. Couldn't open my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't. And I was just not having it. And then the girls were like, well, let's push.
Yeah.
I don't know who was. I know your mom was there. I know the Shani was there. And yeah. I know the other midwife was there. But if there was anything else in the room, I didn't see anyone.
Focused on what you were doing.
And then we were ready to push. Mm-hmm. And it's not pleasant. It is really, really hard because it asks for the last bit of strength you have in your body.
You were saying to me something like, you know, it'd be like you trying to shit out a pineapple, you know.
It is. And then it's all those things like the vulnerability of, mm-hmm. you know, you being there with doctors looking at you. And I mean, it's just not, and you worry about your baby and it feels so painful. They're like, oh, what if the baby's in pain? There's all sorts of things. It's a very emotional, it's not just physical. It's a mm-hmm. very emotional sort of pain as well. Anyway, started to push and, you know, this time I knew that something was happening because the epidural wasn't there. So we know I didn't feel him descending. But with her, I did feel. So I knew mm-hmm. that I'm making progress. I'm not making progress. And it was over very quickly. I think, yeah, from when I started to push.
Until you had to pace yourself, right? You were thinking, oh, man, I'm just going to push so hard. But that's when you get a tear.
Well, I pushed, I think, 3 times.
And they told you to pace yourself and just do little pushes,
and
didn't they?
And then I pushed 3 times. And then I had another contraction that I just let go. I didn't push at all. It was like, huh. Just had to hold my breath and stuff. And then I pushed again. And her head came out.
Mm.
And not completely, though. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It just, you know, was there. Mm-hmm. And they were like, just slow down. I'm like, I'm pushing her out. Like, slow down. Little push. And that was so hard because your whole body is like working towards like, just get to get this thing out. But you have to pace yourself. It's really hard. And, you know, bit by bit, she came up. And she was on me, you know, straight away. And everyone was crying. It was funny. And I could finally open my eyes and everyone was like really overwhelmed and sweaty and everyone was crying. It was really nice. So that was, and your mom was there. Like, her mom was amazing. Just, you know, I couldn't see her, but I could hear her and she was holding my hand and like we had this. Yeah. And she came out tiny bigger than we expected,
mm-hmm.
In terms of weight and everything, but I'm still tiny. She's here now.
Awesome. I know. Well, she's doing well. So she was underweight. She was 2.525 kilograms, which is, I don't know how many pounds that is, probably like 5 pounds.
Yeah.
So she's underweight, but, and she, you had sort of a bit of difficulty staying in the hospital for an extra night or two because she wasn't able to maintain her body temperature.
She was, herself. It was fluctuating a little bit and they wanted me to stay another night. Mm-hmm. And it was just hard because I just wanted to come home and mm-hmm. I was worried about Noah as well. But then we got here and I realized that maybe another night in the hospital would do me some good.
Well, Mum was saying, you know, when she was having us, she was like, oh, man, you'd get a 5 to 7 day stint in the hospital as default. Mm. You just get to stay in there for that long. That was just what was expected. Whereas nowadays, obviously, you have the ability to leave. You could have left at any time if you wanted to. You just have to sign a waiver and take the responsibility of whatever happens.
Yeah.
So, it's all going well. We're sort of adjusting now. It's only been, what, a day that we've been home?
2 days?
Yeah.
A day.
Well, this is the second day. I think the thing we're just having to do is find our new rhythm, right?
It's been very, it makes me really anxious that now we're coming from knowing exactly how the day was going to unfold.
Mm-hmm.
Noah sleeps at this time. We have dinner at this time. And I know everything. I know even if he has a tantrum, mm-hmm. which happens a lot, by the way, I kind of know how to work around it, you know, from knowing nothing.
Yep.
Because I got here, I tried my tricks with him. Nothing worked. He was flipping out.
He lost his shit. Yeah, that was the weird thing. We came home and so you had this sort of setup where you wanted to come in to the house and meet Noah first without Joanna. I was carrying Joanna and I'd also bought Noah a gift that we were going to give to him from Joanna.
Worst idea ever.
Why is that?
He just got upset and like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he likes the gift now.
Yeah.
But at the time, yeah, he was a bit raging. Yeah. But it was really funny because you could see, even though we are now spending more time with him because I've sort of taken a bit of time to not work as much, he just lost his shit. He was so angry. He was throwing tantrums and we're just like, all that's happened is we've brought this baby home, which is just sitting in our arms or sitting in the cot. We're still here hanging out with you, mate. Like, we're around. We're probably spending more time with you, but he can still sense something's different. And
I think it's overwhelming that it was overwhelming that, oh, mom's back. And then dad's here. And then everyone's here and this baby. And like, and there's a new toy. And like, it was a lot. I literally saw him, you know, it's a very, he just couldn't process his emotions and he was shaking and crying so much. And I think he slept from exhaustion. I tried to put him to sleep in the afternoon. He was just not. And then now it is a bit better today. It was a bit better this morning. When he sees me breastfeeding Joanna, he loses it a little bit. He wants milk too. Like he wants his bottle. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, it's interesting seeing the different emotions come out, like jealousy and, you know, anger and stuff that we don't see, obviously, because, you know, prior to a few days ago, Joanna wasn't here and he never really displayed that same kind of thing because there was no one to compete with. But it'll be another kettle of fish. It'll be another thing that we have to just overcome, but we'll do it. Finishing the podcast up, I guess the main point I wanted to do this podcast because some of the things you were noticing when you were going to the hospital to get things like ultrasounds and checkups and have the monitoring was that a lot of the women that were there were immigrant women who had relatively poor English. And I think you were saying there was one woman from Africa who spoke no English at all.
No English whatsoever.
And was pregnant with what you said you overheard was her 10th child and that she was being asked all of these questions about discussing things like Caesars and having contraception and stuff. And so, I thought it would be a good point of doing this podcast to talk about expectations of what it's like to go through the system here when you're giving birth.
The public system.
Yeah, because I imagine that a lot of women, especially migrant women, who are going to be listening to this will probably come to Australia and have not really thought about it or investigated it until they end up pregnant, which is why I thought it would be important to sort of share our experience. Do you want to talk about what you thought it was like overall? How did it compare to, I don't know, you can obviously talk about Brazil. Is it something that migrant women should be worried about?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I saw some really, from my perspective, really sad situations where you in a hospital, you're very vulnerable and you're pregnant. Maybe it's your first baby and you can't ask questions.
Yeah.
And they will provide you with a translator, but that's another person translating things for you. And it definitely helps. I mean, don't get me wrong, but, it's just not, you're just not empowered, you know, to do your own thing.
And it was something, sorry to interrupt you, it was something that I hadn't even thought about with English being so important because it would give you this ability to have that level, that extra level of communication and confidence when you're going through such a vulnerable situation in your life, especially in a foreign country. So, again, if you are thinking about getting pregnant and having a child in a foreign country, whether it's Australia or not, get on top of the language just for the sake of being able to communicate with doctors and nurses effectively so that you feel confident when you're going through this process, that you know what's going on.
It is. I saw women trying to ask questions to the midwives and doctors and they just not getting it. And as a, you know, I don't, English is not my first language. So I kind of like, I kind of understand what she's trying to say, but these people are not, you know, English teachers.
Yeah.
And they, you know, the hospital is busy and other things. So you kind of like, oh, they must be so frustrating. You just want to know, you know, this. And then they get, appointments wrong, you know, dates and times and things. And
well, and I can't imagine if you suddenly have to go to have a cesarean during your birth and it's an emergency and they can't really explain to you or wait for a translator. They just have to say, you just have to believe us or, you know.
And because of COVID, a lot of times you're by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you couldn't be there with me for the appointments. So, if I wasn't able to communicate, it would be even more stressful going through what we went through, not knowing if she was okay or, you know, just because I couldn't express myself.
Do you want to talk too about the kinds of procedures that you had, especially some of the invasive ones were actually done by men?
Yes.
And immigrant men that were, you know, 100% professional and awesome at what they were doing, but that may be something that some of the women from more conservative cultures mm-hmm. may want to be aware of, that it's not necessarily always going to be a woman doing it.
If you're going through the public system, it's probably not going to be the same doctor that you're going to see every time.
Yeah.
And there are male doctors and male, you know, nurses. Male midwives, I mm-hmm. haven't seen one, but definitely doctors.
Yeah.
And sometimes they do have to, you know, examine you and do an ultrasound, you know.
Internal one.
Maybe for some cultures, even an ultrasound is like you're going to, you know, put your pants down and they're going to check your belly and stuff. So, yeah, it is quite, even for me, like the stretch and sweep, I was a male doctor mm-hmm. and my student midwife was with me and I told her, if you weren't here, I would feel really uncomfortable just because it's the first time I'm seeing this doctor.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, he's a male and it's just not something you used to. Like I always see female doctors and for female stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But that said, how did it go?
It was absolutely professional and he made me feel very comfortable and I would definitely do it again if I had to.
Yeah.
Because it did not, and it worked.
Yeah.
And it did not, the fact that he was a male doctor did not make it any uncomfortable, you know, it was just not part of the equation.
Yeah.
He was just a doctor.
I guess you have to think about how many times he's done that procedure, probably yeah. that day.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, you're not special.
The other thing is sometimes they have student doctors and student midwives with them.
So you had that happen too.
He had a student doctor with him, mm-hmm. was a guy, mm-hmm. and he asked me, do you allow me to stay? Because if you don't want me to stay, I can leave the room. And I was like, man, I'm already here. Honestly.
Yeah.
But because they are very, very professional, I wouldn't lie about it. It's really.
But that said, I would say if you are, say, a Muslim woman who is having a child in Australia and you are uncomfortable with having male doctors, there mm-hmm. are almost certainly people you can speak
Absolutely.
To about having options
Absolutely.
Of having female doctors or not having students present. Like, don't be afraid again to communicate and yeah. ask questions.
And again, you need to be able to communicate.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you get always, every single time you get asked beforehand.
Yeah.
Do you allow this procedure to?
So they tend to be very good with their yes. communication too. They're not just going to rush you and
force
not ask.
You or like talk you into things. Not yeah. No. It's even like the most, very simple things that you have to do. Like you have to, can I check your hearing? You know, those yeah. little, can I take a blood pressure? They will ask for consent.
Yeah.
So you can always say, I'm not comfortable with that. Can yeah. I choose someone else?
Awesome. Well, is there anything else you want to mention for, you know, migrant mothers that are going mm-hmm. to have children in Australia, information you think would be useful to them that you would like to have known prior to going to this experience, going through this experience?
Not really. I can't think of anything. But like if you have Medicare, that really mm-hmm. helps because Medicare covers everything. And then there are costs.
There are fewer shocks.
out of pocket costs that you might have to cover.
Yeah.
But just make sure you know what your health insurance is covering or not. And yeah, that was another baby that we put in this world. And we're done.
The door's slightly open. There's a tiny slither of a crack to a potential third maybe.
There is not a single beam
of
light.
It's like a bank vault door, is it?
It is not.
The 50th, you know, ground floor beneath the surface of the earth.
We are complete now.
I guess, too, I want to say thank you to everyone for your support. There were so many of you guys on Facebook, Instagram, and elsewhere just sending us messages and supporting us. So, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And, looking forward to showing you more of Joanna as she grows and develops.
Mm.
But, I guess that's it for this podcast. Hopefully, you guys enjoyed it. Hopefully, I wasn't too loud and Kel was too quiet.
I'm probably very quiet, but she's here, so I don't want to, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're filming this currently facing one another on our bed. In our bedroom with the lights off with Joanna just chilling in the sleeping cot to the side beside Kel, waiting for Noah to probably wake up in an hour or so and come home.
Yes, and start the party. Oh, God.
Positiva, poha. All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
See ya.